You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. My guest today is Elaine Blickley, owner and consultant with Horses for Clean Water, and we will be discussing fly and insect control on horse farms. Thank you for joining me today, Elaine.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So we're going to dive right into this topic. But before we start talking about insect control and the cons of insects in horse barns, are there any insects that you would say are desirable in the barn?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm really glad that you asked it, because it's important to point out that most insects are beneficial. It's something like 2%. Experts say that it's 2% of all insects are pests. So unfortunately, it's like those 2% that us horse people are dealing with. But actually, in the barn, most of the insects that we're dealing with are going to be like problem insects. And so what I'm thinking of is flies and mosquitoes and biting midges, and sometimes they're called gnats or buffalo gnats. But I think that those are probably the ones that we want to focus on as being problematic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And so in terms of those beneficial insects, how could horse farm owners and managers cultivate a healthy population of those desirable bugs?
Yeah, so as far as desirable bugs that would outcompete or would help to manage the problematic ones, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the only one that, as far as insects that would prey on those that I can think of is the parasitoids, the fly parasitoids. So those are going to be like the fly parasites that that we can purchase and let loose at our places to prey on fly larvae. So those are stingless nocturnal wasps that are the size of a gnat, and you order them from online sources, and then you can release them at your property, and they, when they hatch, they go and seek out the fly larva, and they lay their eggs in the fly larva, and then that kills the flies and they never hatch. So if you have those on your property, you want to be really careful that you're not spraying any kind of insecticide, because it would kill all insects and not just flies. So that would be one that you'd want to manage for, helping to control your fly population.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard about those products, but I've never actually tried them. And it's something that I'm always curious about. I'm lucky that we don't have too many bugs at the farm where I have my two miniature horses on our property. And the farm where I board my horse does their own insect control. So I'm a little bit spoiled in that way, I guess.
Oh, well then, yeah, you are really lucky. They must do a good job of mud and manure management, because those are like the first things that you want to think about when you're trying to control flies and mosquitoes and midges, is mud and manure management. So if you have a good manure management program where you're picking it up at least every 3 days to help break that parasite reinfestation cycle, and if you're composting or otherwise getting the manure off of your property, then that's not habitat for certain types of flies that would be seeking out that organic material. And then also mud too. So maybe your place doesn't have too much wet areas, because I had a veterinary entomologist tell me once that anytime you've got a wet spot on your property, it's a fly's happy spot. And that's going to be breeding ground for flies and mosquitoes and midges. So those are the two big things. And maybe your property is pretty good as far as that goes.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I am lucky. We don't have horrible mud, at least during the warmer months of the year where the flies are out here in the Northeast. During the winter, it's a different story, but that's okay. I don't think you can help that too much. So you talked about manure and mud management. Would you call those your top two strategies for insect control, or are there others that you employ inside the barn and outside around the property?
Yeah, I would say mud manure are the top two, because that's getting rid of their habitat that they need and their food and water source. But also simple things like keeping feeders clean. Like, I have a couple of horses that are really bad. They're just like, when you give them their supplements, they just like slime all over the place. So they get this gooey dried slime on their feeders, and that attracts other kinds of flies. So if you can keep, you know, water buckets or feed buckets clean, if you can clean out waters, mosquitoes need stagnant water. So that's like 7 to 10 days. So if you can clean out all of your waters every 7 to 10 days, that'll help reduce mosquito habitat. And then another strategy that I really like, that's a lot of fun, I think, is to have insect eating birds on your property. So most birds go through a stage of their life where they do eat insects, but there's specific birds that eat a lot of insects. So those are like swallows, and different kinds of swallows, and swallows are all over North America. And then there's purple martins and bluebirds, and those three species of birds, they eat a ton of insects, like hundreds, maybe even 1,000 a day. Depends on the bird and where you live. But they are what's called a secondary cavity dweller, and that means that they can't make the nest or the hole in the tree themselves. And so somebody else has to make that hole for them. So they respond really well to nest boxes. So you can go to any like wild bird store, or you can look up online and you can find out how to make plans to build a nest box for, say, violet green swallows, or for bluebirds or purple martins.
That's great. The birds are definitely something I haven't thought about as an insect control strategy. So I like that a lot. And it adds some beauty to your farm as well, I think.
Yeah. In Washington, when we lived in Washington — we live in Idaho now — but when we lived in Washington, we had purple martins there, and they were so awesome and so much fun. We had several boxes on our properties, and they were just always flying in and out. And, you know, so you have two parent birds, and then you have the babies, and then you have, sometimes you have an aunt or an uncle that also helps. But we, you know, so that's a ton of insect control. But we would give like the nest boxes to friends as a Christmas present, or, you know, whatever kind of present, and people would tell us how much fun it was to hang those nest boxes and watch them show up.
That's awesome. I love that idea. That's super cool.
Yeah. So you can, if you want advice on what kind of insect eating birds are specific to your area, you can talk to, if there's an Audubon club in your area, they would be great to talk to, because they're all birders, and they're all super amazingly knowledgeable. Or you can talk to Extension. That would be another way to get information on what insect-eating birds are going to be in your area. And then those resources can help you with bird boxes. Audubon also has a great book on building nest boxes for birds.
Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts. So you mentioned reducing mud and water on your property, especially stagnant water. So what are your tips for those that might have a creek or stream or also still water such as a pond on their property? For example, a few years ago, I worked for a farm that had a marshy area on one side of the property and we would trail ride through it. And the horses had a love-hate relationship with it, I like to think, because they loved trail riding. It was nice out there, but the bugs were awful at certain times of year. So is there anything you can do about those more natural water sources, or is that just something you kind of have to deal with?
Yeah, those are good questions. The insects are more associated with stagnant water than with moving water. So yeah, it's going to be more like ponds or marshy areas. And then if they are a healthy functioning area, there's going to be all the different animals and insects there to make it functioning correctly so that it shouldn't be out of control as far as a bazillion insects. But having said that, there's still a likelihood that there's going to be like biting midges and mosquitoes in those areas. So you can do more nest boxes of the birds that we just talked about. And those birds are going to get the daytime insects. And then you can put up nest boxes for bats. And bats will get your nocturnal insects. They're a little harder to attract. I mean, I have been putting up bat boxes for probably 30 years or more and have never gotten a bat. But I know other people that like put it up and they get a bat right away. So once again, you have to have a box that's specific for bats and you have to hang it in a place that's going to attract them. They like to be in the sun so that it's warm during the day. But you could talk to Extension and again to your local Audubon Club, or you could look it up online or through the library. But bats would help with that. There's also mosquito dunks that are a biological control, and you could, they're a type of bacteria and they will float in ponds. It releases a type of bacteria that's going to kill the mosquito larva. So that's another option. And then you can also make sure that there's fish in that pond that might eat mosquito larva. A lot of times people say that goldfish eat mosquito larva, and goldfish are vegetarians. They eat algae. So they're not so likely to be eating the mosquitoes, but there are mosquito eating fish. And in some places, the Natural Resource agencies will actually supply those or help direct you to how you can purchase those kinds of fish. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure. And it's super helpful to know what agencies you can reach out to for help with, especially with your specific area, because I mean, even within the United States, each area is a little bit different on what might be optimal. So it's nice to know which resources to take a look at. That's super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I can mention another agency that might be helpful, and that's the Conservation District. I'm a big fan of working with conservation districts. There's actually one in every county in the United States. It's often like the best kept secret. They're not like their famous cousins, Extension. Extension, everybody knows about Extension and nobody seems to know about conservation districts, but They do very similar things. They're a natural resource organization, and they're going to help you with your natural resource issues. So like if you have a creek that you want to fence your livestock out of, or if you have flooding on your property, in some cases they'll help with technical assistance for mud and manure management. They'll help design compost bins for manure management. In some cases, they'll help with pasture management and can give you recommendations for seeding types for your pastures. And some of the bigger conservation districts even have cost sharing for things like cross fencing your pasture or putting in gutters and downspouts to help with drainage around your barn. They're a great organization. So they're a conservation district, and the way you find out about them is by Googling it, and just Google the name of your county and then the words conservation district. And each state, some states, they just call them a conservation district. Some they call them a resource conservation district, like in California. In other states like Oregon, they call them a soil and water conservation district. So they're going to have a slightly different name, but they're all non-regulatory, and they're there to provide technical assistance and education on natural resource issues.
That's awesome. That sounds like a really great resource. Thank you.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So another insect that we very, very frequently deal with here in Pennsylvania are ticks. So especially I find them on my dog all the time because she's red and white. So it's very easy to spot them, but find them on my horses too. Myself, it's especially this time of year, they're out in full force. So do you have any tips for dealing with ticks?
Oh boy. I have never had to deal with them on my horses. I have on my dogs, and I do the tick control that my veterinarian recommends for ticks. But one natural control I would recommend is to, it's a love-hate kind of thing with horse owners, but opossums, they eat a ton of ticks. And I know they can carry other diseases that we're often concerned about, but, you know, if you can find a way to mutually exist with them, they'll do some tick control for you as they scrounge about on your property. But yeah, otherwise I can't think that I've got any tricks up my sleeve for tick control other than talking to your veterinarian.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the possums, but you're right. It's definitely a love-hate relationship, but I'm sure that especially if the ticks keep getting worse, at least in this area of the country, we might have to start getting creative with our solutions.
Unfortunately, ticks are one of the things that with climate change, they're slated to get worse as the planet warms. It just is more habitat for ticks. And they're moving further north into areas that are novel areas for them. And animals don't have as much strategies or resistance to them. And, you know, in places like New England, it's really bad with ticks and Lyme disease and things like that.
Yeah, it's really not uncommon to hear someone say, oh, you know, my horse was acting funny and we couldn't find another obvious cause and he's not particularly lame, so we're putting him on doxycycline or something like that to treat him for Lyme's. I mean, that's super common in this area.
Yeah, it's very concerning for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my very first horse. It was the sweetest horse ever, and as soon as he ended up with Lyme's, you could tell he was not happy. He was not cuddly and kind anymore under saddle or on the cross ties and around the barn. So it was easy to tell what was going on with him, but some of them are a little bit trickier. It's really tough.
Yeah, I bet. And are they, what are the other symptoms of Lyme disease?
I believe I've heard of people having horses with symptoms as severe as like neurologic defects.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And
yeah,
some like more severe lamenesses. I think the unfortunate part is the clinical signs really vary. So I think it can be hard to nail that one down.
Right. You know, going back to the other insects, I was trying to decide if this might help with it, but for flies and mosquitoes, the veterinary entomologist that I was working with last year was really big on clothing for horses. So sheets and fly boots and fly masks. I mean, she said that besides cleaning up mud and manure and keeping the habitat, you know, as sanitary as possible, that horse clothing was your best bet for flies, mosquitoes, and midges. I told that to my boarders here. We have a small boarding stables, and I'm always trying to get them to quit using as much or at least reduce the amount of chemicals that are used, insecticides and things. Mm-hmm. And I reported to them like what I had learned from the veterinary entomologist. And it was like the next day and they had bought all this clothing for their horses and they were so excited to have fly sheets and fly, they already had fly masks, but and fly boots. And I was amazed at how helpful those really were. It made such a big difference for keeping the insects off of our horses. And I wonder if it might also help with ticks or not. They'd just probably crawl underneath it, huh?
Yeah, they're tricky, but the fly sheet and all the fly gear, I have a thoroughbred gelding who's pretty typical, thin skinned, and he hates bugs. He is the sweetest boy, but bugs just make him so mad. So he wears all of his gear out in the pasture and it keeps him much happier. So it definitely does work.
And another fun thing about the horse clothing that veterinary entomologist said, that there's some research that shows that zebra stripes really help. That zebras actually, their stripes naturally repel flies. It supposedly confuses them. So if you buy fly clothing that looks like a zebra, that that might help a little bit.
I actually did see that and I thought that was super interesting. And I didn't read into the full studies, but I'd be really interested to learn how they were able to conduct that research.
I know. How did they figure that out with the zebras? Yeah. She also said, though, that if you like buy a new fly sheet and then put it on your horse and go to turn it out with his friends, apparently it's kind of scary to the other horses. So you're supposed to be careful about how you introduce the zebra fly sheet to his herd mates.
That's super funny.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Yeah,
for sure. So I guess that kind of leads into one of my other questions for you is, are there any insect control tactics that could be harmful to horses or other animals on the property that farm owners should try to avoid?
Yeah, the insecticides for sure. You know, they can kill good bugs as well as the pesty ones, and they can cause allergic reactions to the horses or to humans. For anybody that is using fly sprays on our property, well, first of all, the fly sprays, they're almost counterindicated because, again, going back to the veterinary entomologist, she said that flies, you spray the fly spray on a horse, the fly lands on the horse, and they're just there for like a microsecond, and they get a little tiny dose, and it, because flies' life cycles are so short that they build up an immunity and then they pass that on to their offspring. And so she said that fly sprays are really not going to be very useful. The only kinds that might be useful are ones that are more like a lotion, because it actually forms a barrier that's going to last a little bit longer, but those are messy to put on. And, you know, we usually don't want to get it all over our hands. But what I noticed in my, around my barn with my borders is when people were using fly spray, I didn't see any dead flies, but I'd see all these other dead insects like little pill bugs and little spiders and things. And those are beneficial ones that are going to help with the situation. So if anybody uses fly sprays at our place, I make them use it inside the barn because there's, you know, less good bugs inside the barn than outside on the ground. So I would say that what you want to be careful about is using insecticides, because they can cause negative problems, both for the flies that develop resistance and as far as killing other beneficial insects.
Yeah, that's a really good point for people to consider.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if people haven't tried it, fly tape and fly bags, those work so great. They are inexpensive and you just get a ton of flies on them.
Yeah, you really do. I don't think you even realize how many flies you have until you see them collect like that.
Yeah, there's something satisfactory about seeing, you know, 100 flies on the fly tape and being able to throw that out. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And fly bags the same way. I was using them wrong for a long time. I was putting them up around my barn and finding them to be annoying, and, you know, because they really stink. And they attract a lot of flies. But if you read the directions, which I finally did, and it said, put them around the perimeter of your property, because the idea is that you want to draw the flies away from your place and then trap them.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, they work really well. Yeah.
Those are two that I'll definitely have to take a look at as we're moving into summer. I've used the tape before, but I haven't tried the bags, and I think I might almost like that idea better.
Yeah, they both work really well. Another thing is fans. If it's a problem with like mosquitoes or midges, well, if you bring them in at nighttime, most of those insects don't like the shady stalls. And you can also use fans, because like midges are weak flyers and they can't fly very well in a breeze. So if you have a fan in the stall for your horse, that's going to help a lot too.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're coming, unfortunately, to the end of our time today, but I have one last question for you, and I'd like to know if there's a common misconception that you hear all the time about fly and insect control on horse farms.
Well, I think that people just don't realize the correlation between mud and manure, and when you get the out-of-control insect populations, like you're still always going to have a baseline amount of flies. But if you do these things that we're talking about, picking up manure, composting it, getting rid of the mud spots, cleaning feed tubs and water buckets regularly, and then using the fly predators along with the non-chemical fly traps like tapes and bags, I think your numbers are just going to be greatly reduced. They're not going to be eliminated, but you're going to have a lot lower population of flies on your place compared to your neighbors who maybe don't do these techniques.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah. That sounds awesome. That's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you today, Elaine. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, I'm so glad to have been invited and to be a part of it. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.